Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley. I am joined tonight for a discussion of RoboCop by Mark Ahn. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Bitches, leave.
It feels like a long time since you've been here, Clarence Boddicker. And I'm happy to have you back. You can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com with all of our past shows. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And coming up in the month of June, which will start in just a few days, I believe, is our new 30 Stars of Summer Game Challenge. It's not a contest. There's no prize except self-respect.
It's just a way to keep score of your everyday normal life.
Exactly. Go to fthismovie.blogspot.com and find the 30 days of summer, 30 stars of summer calendar. Every day, a new actor. You have to find a movie from that actor that you've never seen, preferably, and watch it, and then write a short review, and we'll all try and turn each other on to some new movies that we haven't seen. It's a fun summer thing, right? It's like the McRib. Just once a year. That's fine.
Right. June 1st.
Yes.
The first person is
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart.
Yes.
Five-O Goes West.
Absolutely, which I've never seen.
I haven't either, and I'm kind of tempted to.
If that's going
to
be your entry.
Right. I don't know if I'm going to be. Impressive. Right, but then that establishes the pattern of like, okay, well, am I going to just watch all the jokey ones?
Yeah, right.
Or am I going to watch like the serious ones?
So by the time you get to Whoopi Goldberg, what was that dinosaur movie she made?
Was it a dinosaur movie?
I think it's Theodore Rex.
Was it like a live action?
Yeah.
It was like a rubber dinosaur.
Yeah.
I feel like I remember this.
It's like a buddy cop movie, and her partner is a dinosaur.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So make sure you watch. I think it's Theodore Rex. Clever, right?
It is. Is it because it's a dinosaur? And so that's why it's all dinosaurs are called
Rex. I think Theodore Rex is just a dude's name. The dinosaur's name is Scott.
Did they later remake the movie and they called it Taxi? And then Jimmy Fallon played the dinosaur.
I saw Taxi.
I did too.
It was not good.
It wasn't. It really wasn't. Sorry, guys.
Make sure you go to fthismovie.blogspot.com, read up about 30 Stars of Summer, and play along with us all the month of June. We're hoping it's going to be a lot of fun. It's an experiment. It's our first time doing this. So get on board, everyone.
Yeah, try something new.
Seriously.
Put yourself out there.
A little bit. Try a McRib, is what I'm saying. It's ribs and pickles.
Right. And it's ribs. It's facsimile meat in the shape of an animal that doesn't exist.
That's right. With pickles.
But it's delicious.
Mark, have you seen anything good lately?
Anything good lately is a different question.
Have you seen anything lately?
Have I seen anything
lately?
I saw... Okay, we'll go
with... Anything with, like, a dinosaur and Whoopi Goldberg?
No. I'll have to say no.
You have all the month of June to track that down.
Right. What's funny is that even like 60 seconds ago, before we had the Theodore Rex conversation,
yes.
I didn't think... my same answer was going to be no. But now I know that there's an actual movie that's like... I've learned so many things in the last minute. Let's see. I've been watching Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Which is enjoyable. I ordered the first season on DVD with some gift money off of Amazon, and so that's great. And so I've been watching it this season.
Okay.
But then it also makes me long for... I was like, remember last season? And so, like, I don't know if anybody else does this, but you do the thing where you're, like, watching the previous season just to kind of, like, catch up and remember and do some other things. And also because you're so high on that show.
Right.
Like, I can't wait for another week. I need my fix now! And so you, like, Thursday night, you pop in a DVD of whatever it is that you're wanting to watch. And so do you watch Game of Thrones?
I do.
I've been really... And I know that you're... you have an ambiguous relationship with books.
That's not true.
So
I like books. When the first season ended, I actually really wanted to go ahead and read all the books because I didn't want to wait to find out what happened.
Right.
But then I felt like that would be denying myself the enjoyment of the show.
Right.
So I'm holding off.
It's a lot of books too. Well, it's like five books, and the dude and George R. R. Martin does not mess around. It's like 800, 900 pages.
And they're
books.
Pretty dense. I mean, right. Like, fantasy in general is dense because it's made up names.
Right. Although he does a good job with it. It doesn't, like, get super complicated. I feel like that is reflected in the show. Do you enjoy it? Like, you enjoy it, obviously.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Okay.
I
feel like my enjoyment of it, although I still enjoy it, is sort of obviously impacted by the fact that I've read all the books, too, sometimes.
Okay.
Although, and to the credit of the creators, is it's what I like about the books. Everything I think most of what I like about the books has been transferred onto screen.
Oh, that's good.
Which I really like. Like, yeah, yeah. The way that I thought that this, you know, certain characters would behave, like my favorite moments or whatever, are all pretty much there. Like that's the dialogue good. And like the sharpness of certain things.
Right, right, right.
Like the fact that terrible things constantly can happen at any moment. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's such a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
So Game of Thrones has been one thing. I watched The Avengers. I know there's been a lot of talk on our podcast and sure. like everywhere else in the world.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the movie that's going to kind of define the summer. Obviously, things could yeah. change. It's still very early in the summer, but that seems to be the only movie that people are really talking about.
Yeah, and I think that... When does The Dark Knight come out?
July something? I should know off the top of my head, yeah, but I don't.
And then Prometheus is early July?
Prometheus is like the second week of June, so it's actually pretty soon. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I think until that stuff... I mean, Battleship is not going to knock anything off anyway.
No.
And so I think until Batman... It's not going to be... Avengers is pretty much going to be what everyone's going to be talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you liked The Avengers?
I loved The Avengers. Yeah. I had a great time. Super entertaining. I don't want to repeat what everybody's been saying previously. I know you guys have talked a lot about it. But everything that you guys talked about, I definitely agree with.
It's a ton of fun. If you guys haven't seen it, I don't think there's anybody left that hasn't seen it. But if you haven't, you probably should.
Right.
Especially before it starts to get bumped out of theaters for Snow White and the Huntsman, stuff like that.
Stop
you know.
Yourself. I do want to go see it again.
I would love it. To also, although that I think, yeah. is tricky now.
I but. Think I want to maybe... Oh, right. You've got some things.
Yeah.
I want to go try to see it in 3D.
Oh, yeah?
Not because I love 3D, but right. just to see if it's any different
okay.
kind of deal.
Sure.
What else have I been seeing? That's about it. I think I saw Raid Redemption with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was, I know you did a little write-up, but we haven't really talked about it. Raid Redemption was pretty awesome. Super, super intense.
Yeah, crazy movie.
Yeah, I think the more I think about it, the like the moments that stick with me are all the fighting. Like, I know there's always complaints like in the middle
so,
of
like,
watching
the
it.
The whole movie?
Pretty much, yeah. Like, you know, people make complaints about, oh, it's too simple, it's too obvious, it's too whatever. But you know what? The week afterwards, you're not thinking about, oh, gee, this plot was far too simple. There's no
sure.
narrative gravitas in
sure,
this.
Sure, thing. Sure, sure.
No, you're thinking about, holy crap, I can't believe that ridiculous
right.
fight at the end where the... am I giving away? Where yeah. the one guy fights the other guy, and then the other guy... Which
right.
is amazing. The
right.
climactic fight at the end of The Raid Redemption is absolutely awesome.
Well, it's like if you go to see a musical and the story is simplistic and the characters are a little bit underdeveloped, but like every song and dance number is incredible.
Right.
You could probably still say like, oh, that worked. You know, it may not be like a great all-time classic movie, but as a musical, it was really good. That's kind of The Raid is like, well, the action is unlike anything you've ever seen. So even
yeah.
if the other stuff is kind of simplified, that's okay.
Right. That's about it. Patrick, what? I know you've been very busy, but...
I have been, and I've been watching weird, like, semi-obscure stuff that, like, I recorded off of Turner Classic Movies.
Nice.
And I saw The Dictator, which I did not like. I had to see that for a job, and I wrote a review of it, which you can find on our Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/fthismovie, you can find my review of The Dictator. The movie that I want to talk about, and I truly can't remember if I've talked about this on a podcast before.
Okay.
I don't think I have.
Okay.
So I apologize if I have. That I watched it on Netflix Instant, and that is a documentary called The People versus George Lucas.
I don't remember if you have.
Okay.
I feel like you and I just in conversation talked
okay.
about this, but I'm not sure if we've...
It is a giant piece of garbage, because it's literally just 90 more minutes of people whining about the Star Wars prequels, and it's no one has anything new to say. It's
right.
all, George Lucas raped my childhood, Han shot first. At one point, somebody complains that, like, Lucas is greedy because he just keeps putting out, like, merchandise that he knows fans have to buy. And it's like,
right.
well no, then, dummy.
Right.
Don't buy it. Like,
yes.
that's your prerogative. That's mm-hmm. not on Lucas. But it really, it had nothing to say whatsoever. And it bothered me so much because I know that Star Wars fans are passionate. I know that people have strong opinions about the prequels and about George Lucas. And so, in theory, I'm okay watching a documentary about this. Mm-hmm. But I think there's basically one person that seems to sort of have a decent attitude and say, like, lighten up, everybody. Like, these are movies. I'm sorry that we didn't like them, but it's okay. Right. We still have the other movies.
No one's dead.
No.
Right.
Relax. Yeah, so I don't know. It's like, I compare it to, like, okay, if you're a crazy person mm-hmm. who feels super strongly about the Star Wars prequels, I guess this movie tells you what you want to hear. It's like being a super conservative and, like, watching Fox News. It's right. like, I like this because it's repeating things I already think.
Yes.
So maybe you would get something out of it, but I feel like anybody who's rational, who has any perspective on this, it's just more of the same whining that's been going on the internet since 1999, you know?
When did this come out?
Like a year or two ago.
Okay.
And I don't think it ever really played wide, you know? I remember it showed at, like, Comic-Con here in Chicago maybe a year or two ago, mm-hmm. and I did not go see it. And I'm really, really glad because it offers nothing.
That's a long time. 90 minutes is a lot of whining.
Especially when it's all stuff we've already heard. Like, as soon as you right. say George Lucas raped my childhood, you lose at life. Right. You have lost. It was really stupid.
Going back to The Dictator.
Yes.
Like, I haven't seen it, but this is my theory as to why it doesn't work necessarily. Mm-hmm. And surprise, I'm going to say something completely out of my rear end, even okay. though I haven't seen the movie.
All right.
This is my theory. It's all my right. speculation. It's that I think Bruno and Borat work because it's his, like, guerrilla warfare, right, like, right. filmmaking right. shtick,
right.
where he's just going in, he's actually filming, like, kind of real people, or what feels like real people, and sort of, like, realistic, in, like, awkward situations.
Right.
Whereas The Dictator is now, like, this, it's a movie. It's, like, a
yeah, right.
fictional, right. like, not about, like, getting people's genuine, awkward right. reactions to things.
Right.
And, you know, there's freaking, like, Megan Fox is in it. And,
yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it doesn't work, because that's not his thing.
I mean, it could be his thing, because I understand that he can't keep going back to the whole, like, I'm in disguise, I'm
right.
punking people, you know?
Yeah.
You can't keep going back to that well, so I understand why he would want to do something a little bit different. The problem is, like, the character that he came up with and the script that he co-wrote isn't funny, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you can write a fictional movie where he interacts with other professional actors,
right.
and it could be really funny,
mm-hmm.
But The Dictator is not.
Yeah, it's not that movie.
No. And again, part of what worked about those first two movies is that it was exposing real people's own prejudices, you know, and that's
yeah.
part of what made it so much fun to watch, is like when he gets an entire stadium of people to sing along Throw the Jew Down the Well, you're not necessarily laughing at what he's saying, you're laughing at this whole situation. I can't believe all these people have gone along with this.
Yeah.
And The Dictator just doesn't do anything like that, you know.
Yeah. I just wonder if that's the scriptedness of it,
yeah.
of a is sort of getting in his way, or if he has
maybe.
A way out around it.
Or if he just maybe had written a better script. I really don't know, you know. Whatever. Let's talk about RoboCop.
Let's do it.
Oh, dear. Where do we start with RoboCop?
Yeah, I'll start with
yeah.
the movie poster.
That's okay.
like a good place.
All right.
The first time I wanted... This is not an amazing story, so don't wait for anything. Right. Let me undersell my story before I tell it to you, everybody. That's correct rhetorical presentation of things. I remember when the movie came out, I forget how old it was, 87?
Mm-hmm.
It came out in 87.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just a little one. I'm like in 7th grade, 6th grade, right on the border of like when you should watch this, because it's super gory.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy violent. When I watched it later on, I was like, oh, I'm glad I didn't go see it when I was 12, like the idiot that I am. But, you know, I'm a little boy and I'm obsessed with like robots and like killing bad guys. That's a good thing. So I remember watching it and thinking, like, that is so cool. That is the idea of a robot good guy,
yeah.
and he's a cop. That's amazing. And then I realized that the movie – here's where the my beef with the movie poster is that I don't know if it's – the picture of him, it's like he's standing outside of his car, like mm-hmm. one leg in and one leg out,
mm-hmm.
and then he's, like, red. The top, like, his helmet thing is red.
Okay.
The top part of his armor is red. And then the rest of it was blue. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's what he looks like. And then when I watched the movie, I'm like, he's not freaking red! He's blue.
That's your big complaint.
No, it's, well, I just wanted to start with the movie poster because I was just re-looking at the movie poster.
So you think it was because he was like standing under a neon light, maybe?
Right,
he was
standing
poster.
Like, right,
he's, like in the parking lot
right,
of a 7-Eleven.
Right.
He's got some Robo coffee.
Right.
And a Robo Slurpee.
A Robo Slurpee would be delicious.
Yeah, it would.
It would probably be very viscous, though. The I think the red light is like the police light on the back.
Oh, that
of the
makes
car.
Sense. So that I'm makes
like,
more sense.
I'm like, that's so damn. That's such a small thing. But yeah. It's like, that's not what he even looks like. Why did you put that, your main character, and incorrectly painted him? That seems stupid.
I so badly wanted to see RoboCop in 87, and I probably did. Not in the theater, but I know I saw it. A friend of mine, like, had parents who were way more lenient than my own, and so when I would, like, sleep over at his house, we would always get to watch rated R movies on
Good job,
video.
Lenient parents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You created
so
a whole generation
I definitely
of movie
saw RoboCop
lovers.
At age 10.
Right.
But even before that, I really wanted to see it because I was aware at age 10 that it had gotten an X rating for violence, and I was so fascinated by that. Like, you mean there's a movie that's
what?
So violent?
I did not know that.
Yeah, 11 times they had to go back to to the ratings board before they
Verhoeven,
would get
what are you
an
doing,
R.
Bud?
He is hardcore.
Yeah, he didn't mess around.
And the movie has subsequently been released over and over again. Like, the Criterion Collection put it out on Laserdisc and then on DVD, and then MGM has put it out on DVD 5 times.
Yeah.
And now it's easy to get sort of now they call it the unrated version. So it's not the X-rated version, but it's not the R-rated theatrical cut. So you basically get to see the version that was rated X for violence.
Okay.
And again, 2012 being what it is, it's still a super violent movie, like you pointed right. out, but it's not an X rating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, wow, this is really violent, but there's no way it would get an X in 2012.
No,
so things have changed.
I don't think I want to know what would get a...
Considerably since. And again, it's a few shots, really. It's
right.
Murphy's arm flying off when he gets...
Yeah. It's the dude getting shot up in the boardroom.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
It's...
Because that was, like, extra... Oh.
Yeah.
Is it necessary to shoot him 37 times? Is that really necessary?
Yeah. And then again, with Clarence Boddicker at the end, there's some... The way that certain things are shot, it's much closer in the X-rated version.
Mm-hmm.
And also... By the way, spoilers for RoboCop throughout this episode. The amount of stuff that falls onto RoboCop's chest. Do you know what I'm talking about? He stabs... Again, spoilers. He stabs Clarence Boddicker in the neck.
Right.
And he pulls his hand out, and like a lot of stuff kind of splats onto his chest.
Oh, I must have missed it.
Yeah, I believe that was part of the...
got it.
Harder version.
Yeah, because I rewatched it on Netflix last night. I do not remember that part at all.
Okay, I wonder if Netflix has just the R-rated version.
Mm.
It's pretty vile.
Damn you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the thing that's fascinating about RoboCop, and let me just say up front, I love RoboCop. I think it's such a great movie. I think it's great in so many different ways. That poster and the title...
Mm-hmm.
sells such a stupid movie.
Yeah,
and in 1987, I could just see so many people looking at that and saying, why would I ever go see a movie called RoboCop?
Right.
About a robot. It's right. It's a step above Theodore Rex. You know what
right.
I mean? It's like
okay.
super
yeah.
high concept, ridiculous. And again, it tricks you because you sit down and, by the way, Paul Verhoeven did this exact same thing again in Starship Troopers. And Starship Troopers is the movie that I kept thinking of watching
yeah.
RoboCop. Because I've told this story before, but when Starship Troopers was coming out, you know, I saw the trailer. It looked like the dumbest movie ever made.
Agreed.
And the title comes up and it says Starship Troopers. And I'm like, those are...
Right, and the corny fonts
right.
and everything. Like,
these are all silly words that don't... Starship Trooper, what... And then you go to see it, and you're like, oh, I was tricked into thinking I was going to see this dumb thing, and it's this crazy, smart
yeah.
Satire, and RoboCop is the exact same thing. You could certainly enjoy RoboCop as just an 80s action movie.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of kick-ass stuff in it, but it's so much more than that, and I think that's so great that the movie is able to function as both.
Yeah. I actually really, maybe I'm looking at this with my now adult eyes,
yeah, yeah.
because I'm so much smarter and wiser because I'm old and fatter. But I really like the title. I like RoboCop as a title.
Okay.
Maybe I'm stupid. But I just, like, it just, it makes sense. Like,
sure.
Like we've in the sense of, I don't know, like we've grown up with the idea, like, either in pop culture or, like, in mass media or whatever, of, like, robots and then, like, machines that kill things or whatever. But I don't think there was, that never got put together, I felt okay. like. You know, there was like, oh, it's like a good machine.
Right.
But it's like a dude still.
Right. So well, right, it's coming just a few years after the Terminator,
yeah.
which was all robots trying to kill right. us. I'm sure there are so many alternate titles for mm-hmm. RoboCop, and I'm sure if I read through them, if I could find them, we would be laughing at them. Because, yeah. of course, now the only title that could possibly work is right. RoboCop. Like, of yeah. course it's RoboCop. Right. It has That's to be dude. RoboCop.
Right, but it caught RoboCop. On. Right, it's such a silly word.
Yeah.
But there is literally no other word that would kind of right. make sense.
And it sort of started that trend of, like, putting robo in front of things.
Right.
To describe.
Robo-face. Oh, wait, that wasn't one.
Perfect example.
Right, robo-baby.
Perfect example. You know, obviously it has so many things to sort of say about the 1980s.
Yes.
About what was happening sort of between class distinction. What was happening with corporate takeovers,
yeah.
what was happening in sort of the Reagan America.
And Detroit. In cities like Detroit.
Right, everywhere. But I think it also works as sort of a, not a parody, but a comment on the action movies of the 1980s. Because here's, you know, this was the decade that you had Rambo,
mm-hmm.
and you had Schwarzenegger playing Commando or whatever. And so here's Paul Verhoeven taking it sort of to its logical conclusion
right.
where it's no longer, you know, this heroic man. It's this soulless robot
right.
who becomes sort of our fascist hero.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so clever.
I think what's super interesting about it is that it's still, even though it's not totally a soulless machine, though.
Well, he turns out to not be right. soulless, and that's sort of part of the movie.
And he gives him just the 10... He's like 10% human, and it's as if... It's kind of like what you were saying before. It's like, okay, well, now you have this hero, and he's a robot or whatever, but we're only going to make him like 5 to 10% human. He's not going to be totally robot, which I think is super interesting now that I'm thinking about what you're saying. Like, you think about Schwarzenegger in Commando, you mm-hmm. think about Rambo. Like, those guys were mechanical.
Right.
Very mechanical.
Right.
Like, he's totally, like, I can avoid all of the bullets, and I never run out, and I keep on shooting, and I don't feel anything, and I'm so tough, or whatever. And then here's this guy who's, like, 10%, 5%
right.
human,
right.
whatever, who is more sensitive, more human,
right?
You
right.
know? And again, to contrast to the Terminator thing, where the Terminator is like has no feelings, does not care, will kill you, and so it kind of turns your expectations of what a robot should be doing. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, oh, why are we enjoying it so much when the robot kills everybody? Maybe we shouldn't enjoy that so much a little bit. Anyway,
well, and that's the trick again that Verhoeven plays with Starship Troopers, where it's like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be cheering when the humans slaughter these bugs, because for all we know, like, the bugs... Well, I don't want to get into Starship Troopers, but it has you cheering for the actions of the humans, and when you take a step back, you realize, like, they may not be in the right. We don't really know. We just assume they are because they're the humans.
Right.
You know, and RoboCop is such an interesting mix of black comedy and satire and straightforward action and these sort of comic book elements. And then even in the RoboCop character, you have sort of this Frankenstein's monster
right.
situation where it's this thing that's been built that's trying to discover or rediscover, as the case may be, its humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going back and forth watching RoboCop because I've seen it a bunch of times and I love it. And I was trying to decide, do I like this better than Starship Troopers?
Mm-hmm.
And I think on a different day I would have two different answers.
Okay.
But, you know, Starship Troopers does so many of the things that RoboCop did first.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me wants to... I think I like RoboCop better because it has more of a soul. Like, Starship Troopers is so much of just the satire element, and RoboCop does have sort of this concern with Murphy's humanity.
Yeah.
And I don't think it totally pulls it off. Mm-hmm. I think some of that is just sort of inserted into the movie, that he's remembering his past life. And
to connect it with that, it feels cut short right at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the ending? There's no...
I've always thought that was so sudden, but the more times I see it, I'm more like, no, that's the punchline. Like, he's gone from being RoboCop to now recognizing, no, I'm Murphy, you know, and that works.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it does, it always struck me, like, I remember the first time I saw it, I think I laughed, because I was like, that's so sudden. You just expect...
Go to black.
Yeah,
right. RoboCop. Done.
And again, you know, they let him play the last act of the movie without his helmet, you know, again, to sort of underscore his humanity, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think about, Clarence Boddicker, who was the name of the character in the movie.
Yes, Kurtwood Smith.
What do you think about Kurtwood Smith as a bad guy?
I think he's great. I mean, I think both he and Ronnie Cox, who plays Dick Jones, mm-hmm. are really great, and two very different kinds of bad guys. Both really effective, and both, I know for the time, were really cast against type. Like, mm-hmm. neither had played roles like that really in the past, and Ronnie Cox went on to play a couple more bad guys, most notably Cohagen mm-hmm. in Total Recall, directed by Paul Verhoeven. Kurtwood Smith never really played many more villains, I don't think, unless you count the dad on That 70s Show as a villain.
That's the, oh, by the way, I'm... Sorry, Mr. Smith. That's the only thing I can see you as all the time. I'm expecting Topher Grace to walk in through old Detroit as...
See, to me, he'll always be Clarence Boddicker.
Yeah, it's jarring for me. I probably haven't seen RoboCop as much as you have, and so all I do is just... Oh, it's so jarring. Like, who chose him? They're like, you know what? That's a good... Not that he did a good job. I like him as the bad guy. But it's also like, who would think to like put him as the bad guy?
But that's kind of what makes him interesting, I think, you know, is that he doesn't really appear to be the type, but he's so... nasty, and he's so evil. And again, it's playing with sort of this idea of, I think Clarence Boddicker is more the standard sort of 80s action movie bad guy. Yes. He has the team of thugs, and he's involved in crime, and he's a murderer, and blah, blah, blah. And I think the movie is smart to then have on this other level the Dick Jones character, who's basically just like a CEO, who's in charge of a corporation, and how he's a bad guy. And we see that a lot now, but I don't feel like we did a ton in like 80s action movies.
Agree.
So I think it's very smart. I will always, there's a few things that haven't dated well in the movie. I actually think the movie holds up really, really well.
I agree with you.
Part of that I think is because we're still, in a situation that is sort of reflected in RoboCop. Like, either the movie's really prescient or nothing has changed in America since 1987.
Right.
Because there's so much that still rings true. There are a few moments of special effects that haven't dated all that well. I'm fine with it. One being the Ed 209 stop motion stuff.
Yes.
Which I still like, but I think modern audiences would see that and say, oh, that, you know, that should be CGI. But the other thing that's always struck me as odd is Dick Jones falling out of the window at the end.
Oh, yeah. That's
With his super long arms.
Right. That's super bad. That's really, really not good. Goodness gracious.
He has such long arms. But other than that, I think the movie really holds up.
I liked that it holds up because part of it is that Detroit still looks like that.
Yeah.
That's a really awful... Anybody who's in Detroit, we're really, really sorry. I'm sorry. But Detroit still looks like that. Yeah. It's all kind of trashy and sort of run down and just sort of... And so it really just feels based in reality. And I tried looking up afterwards. I know in the movie they don't really give a date anywhere.
Right.
They just say in the near future.
Right.
You can sort of infer that it's in the near future. But
yeah.
And then I tried to look up online to see if there was a specific, like, hey, this is set in 2020
or
whatever. But I couldn't find anything.
Right.
And so it's super, and I know Doug talks about this all the time, about liking his movies that are sort of based in in reality kind of.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it still holds up, because it is really based in a reality that's very familiar still.
Right. Well, and partially because I think, you know, you get the sense that this is the future.
Yeah.
But there aren't that many signifiers that it's a future, with the exception of, like, oh, they can build a robot a cop that's a robot. Yeah. Because everything, there's no, like, crazy cars or wacky clothes or, like, you know, flying cities or whatever the hell are in all these future movies. Like you said, it looks like America now with a RoboCop. Like, again, you get the sense of some that it's the future. A lot of it that is through the fake advertising mm-hmm. that runs throughout the movie. That's again one of those super inspired touches that I've always loved about the movie. And it's just these little jokes, like the car that gets the horrible gas mileage that's called the SUX,
right?
Like,
and then the guy, the dude who's holding everybody hostage,
yeah,
that guy, and he's like, "That's the car that he wants, and I want one of those, and it better only get 8 miles to the gallon." And then you know, RoboCop is clomping his way up, and then we're hearing all this nuts. So it's a funny, it's a great juxtaposition of this, like. It's supposed to be an intense situation, but it's not, because RoboCop like moves at about -5 miles an hour. He's very slow.
Right, and there's something just funny about that visual.
Right,
that this guy's doing this whole, and here comes the police, but it's this weird clunky robot who takes, and the movie is great about always sort of applying this weird logic to a ridiculous situation.
Right.
Even in the beginning where Ed 209 just shoots the hell out of that guy, it's like, yeah, machines malfunction. And you can't reason with a machine by saying, like, hey, I did drop my gun. The machine doesn't understand that. Right. It's programmed to do a thing. It's going to do the thing. And so there's this weird logic that you can't argue with, literally, because you're about to be shot to death. Mm-hmm. And then there's a great punchline after that where they're like, call the paramedics.
Right.
So the movie's filled with all these great touches of humor. I mean, I like even at the end when Ed 209 is just knocked over on its side, basically, and can't get up. It's like there's this weird logic to that.
It's so sad.
Right.
It's
right.
My favorite part is
it's a ridiculous situation.
My favorite part is that RoboCop is looking back just to see, can you do it? Kenya, and then he's on his back.
Right.
Oh, and here's my favorite part about Ed 209. Who's a great like villain robot. By
yeah.
The way. Is that he? It makes like animal noises.
Yeah.
All the time, right. And like insects. I don't even know how to like just like these screeching like, animal noises.
Right.
And it growls and it's shooting. I'm like, that makes perfect sense, but it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Why would a machine make animal noises when it's shooting somebody up?
Right, and at the end, it's sort of this weird, like, turtle that's been turned over on its back that can't get up.
Right,
or like
whee! Right. They were trying to...
But again, the juxtaposition, I guess, is sort of what works about RoboCop versus Ed 209 is that it's a man, and it's a human, and Ed 209 is still sort of this weird animal. It's like the beta unit. It's like, we tried to fake a life form,
right?
And it didn't work, and so we had to use a person for spare parts, basically.
That would have been beautiful. That's what makes it great.
Right. I mean, I love the idea of sort of privatizing law enforcement. Right. You know, that corporations are privatizing law enforcement, and this was 1987, and here we are, 2012, and man, that is not far off at all, you know? I like
the news bits.
Yeah.
I didn't remember the beginning of the movie from whenever the last time I watched this, that it opens with this, and then they cut in fairly, with the great Lisa Gibbons, the news team that comes in, and it's talking about, like, the state of the world, and that's sort of like a Verhoeven thing, like, he does that fairly often.
Yeah.
And right at the beginning, like, 2 or 3 times, like, it's significant, like, if you just see it at the beginning of the movie, you just think, okay, this is some sort of, like, prologue information.
Right.
It's like, no, he really uses that to establish tone. In lots of different, like, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Like, multiple times. And I was just thinking about the ones that wasn't related. Obviously, it's, like, a lead into the certain parts of the story, but then there's other stuff. It's like, oh, this is what, I forgot what the specific thing is. I wish I remembered or wrote it down, but it's talking about other parts of the world, and that's just how he's, like, fleshing out how just crappy things are.
Right. All we're getting is Detroit, but you're definitely given the sense that, like, this is not unique to Detroit.
Right.
That this is happening in cities everywhere.
Yeah.
And again, he sort of repeats that same thing. You know, he really borrows so much from himself when he does Starship Troopers, because instead of those newscasts, we get the, like, would you like to know more little segments, right, little, you know?
It's like a webpage.
Right.
Kind of, yeah.
With the kids squashing the bugs, and it's hilarious. But it's that same thing where it breaks in every once in a while just to sometimes provide exposition, but also to provide, like, these moments of
humor. Oh, it was like the
humor.
It was the doctor ad. Remember that one? It's like, no, come on in and get your heart transplant. Yeah, We've got the athlete model. Come on in. You can trust me. And it's like a 1-800 number.
Right.
And I was just like, I'm like, why is this even a thing?
RoboCop 2 tries to do some of the same stuff. And I only remember one commercial. It had to do with like a girl wearing this crazy sunblock because, again, the implication is that the ozone layer is completely gone and the sun is so damaging that you have to wear, like, this heavy blue sunblock or something. It didn't work. And honestly, next time you come back, I think we should do RoboCop 2.
Sure.
Because that movie tries to... It's so interesting because it's like, here's RoboCop. It does all these things that I think are difficult. I think it balances a lot of tones and ideas really well.
Yes.
And RoboCop 2 comes in and it's like an imitation and it tries to do a lot of the same things. And I don't think it really works.
Okay. I've never seen it.
Oh, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I'll be so curious to hear your thoughts on it because it definitely wants to be satirical in the way that RoboCop is, but it's not Paul Verhoeven. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's Ed Neumeier who wrote the screenplay for RoboCop. So they get some stuff wrong, but we'll see.
Was that the Frank? Did Frank Miller?
Frank Miller. Yes.
Or for three. He might have done.
He did both. He did both, yeah. And I don't know that he was alone on either. Supposedly he got really rewritten for RoboCop 2.
Apparently, right. I just read this last night, so I don't remember everything. Sorry for not citing my sources. whatever. His script, Miller's script, got so rewritten that there was almost. Like, his original script was almost, not like, unused.
Wow.
And apparently there's just copies floating around of, like, here's Miller's original script or whatever. I didn't go look it up, but I think that would be an interesting sort of... I think they used that for, like, when they made the comic books of RoboCop. Okay. They went off of Miller's script for that.
Oh, I'd be curious to read that.
I'd be curious, right, I don't know if it'd be any good.
Yeah. Again, there's interesting ideas in RoboCop 2, but it does... I don't think it all comes together. What are your feelings about the? I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I want to say it's Bob, the Miguel Ferrer character.
Yes.
What are your feelings about him?
I think it kind of fits in with what you were saying about Kurtwood Smith and then Ronnie Cox as sort of a guy who did something different. Because I think Miguel Ferrer later on, I think he does a lot of TV.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen him on TV a lot. He was always like the good guy. Or the older, like, mentoring... Like, he's always a protagonist, no matter what. And so, I was a little bit surprised to look it up. I was like, wait, this guy? This guy is Bob? You know, and I know it was a lot longer ago, and he's much younger, and whatever, and all that kind of stuff. I liked it only for... I kind of wish there was more of him.
Okay.
Because, like, he gets killed off... Spoilers, everybody.
Yeah, right.
He gets killed off fairly... Not early in it, but he gets about knocked halfway, off like, I guess. Real quick.
Yeah.
And he's such a caricature of this like brash, like super annoying, fast talking car salesman of a corporate executive.
Right.
I actually liked the teaming up of him and then there's his like black sidekick guy who's always smiling and I forget the actor's name, but I liked that combination actually because like the black guy was like funny and weird and sort of like took like there's the part with like the baby food. It's like. He's like, oh, we've made a mixture of nutrients for RoboCop to maintain his organic parts. And then he, like, dips his finger in it. He's like, tastes like baby food, like an idiot. But I actually like that, because he's always doing something funny, so I like watching him. I think Miguel Ferrer was kind of, my favorite part was with him and Ronnie Cox, which starts with that great, sort of camera position where you see it from Ronnie Cox's feet
because he's
taking a dump in the stall and then Miguel, you know, Bob is like just talking crap about him outside and then you see everybody rushing out and then he pulls his pants up and walks out. Love that scene. It was great. I think it was a little bit of a caricature, but I think that's just kind of what he was meant to do or whatever.
Yeah, right. Well, right. It seemed like it was another of the movies targets in a way was sort of this coke-addled, yeah, like, so almost like a Wall Street executive. I mean, obviously he's not. He's like a corporate guy, but like this was, you know, the 80s was sort of the birth of the, like, yuppie sort of, you know, American, and that's psycho, sort of what Bob is. Right. Yeah. Right. And it's interesting because, you know, I've always pictured him or imagined him as a one of the movie's villains because he's an opportunist, because he's such a company man, because he's excited when N209 fails, because he can immediately pitch RoboCop in the same scene, in the same boardroom where his coworker was just shot to death.
Get
it's
up
like,
here!
Right, right, yeah. It's like, this is great, because I want to talk to you about RoboCop. And again, there's just, you know, a comment on corporate culture there and how brutal it is. But so I've always seen him as sort of a different version of a bad guy in the movie.
Yeah.
But the more times I see it, the more I'm like, I don't know. He's not completely
right
a bad guy.
He's the guy that made, if he's not around, there is no RoboCop.
Right.
You'd have Ed 209 running around.
Right. And like, what he wants to do is sort of reprehensible in terms of privatizing security and using the corpse of a human being to turn it into a cyborg. But like, at the same time, he does want it to like work, and you know, like,
he's just,
his intentions are sort of good.
Yeah, in his mind, he's just trying to apply business efficiency to the industry of security.
Right, and there's that great scene where RoboCop kind of comes online and they're throwing him like that little party.
Right.
And he's talking to him like a proud father, where he's like, you hear that? That's for you. When everybody's applauding for him. And he seems to genuinely care about this robot.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So I always find myself a little more bummed out than I expect to be when he is murdered by Dick Jones and Clarence Boddicker.
Right.
You always kind of hope like he's going to get out of it, and he doesn't.
And he'll see the light, and then RoboCop will come save him, and then it'll be great, and then he'll realize, oh, I should make. And again, I think also I secretly hoped that there would be like he would make more RoboCops.
Yeah,
right.
That's what the movie needs.
Right. Yeah.
An army of RoboCops.
But no, it doesn't happen. Let me ask you this: is part of the reason that RoboCop has, I think, remained popular.
I think so.
Like, I think there's some people, there's some staying power with it. It's part of the reason that it's got so much staying power is that it's such an amalgamation of, like, we were talking, I know we've been talking about superheroes on this podcast for a long time, that it is this mix of, like, every superhero.
Sure.
Okay. Because I'm seeing, like, there's obviously the Iron Man comparison,
because
he's literally made out of metal.
Right.
There's part Hulk stuff, because he's like a man, but he's also like this other part, and he doesn't know how to control it, or he's unsure, he doesn't know how to do that stuff. There's like the reluctant hero stuff. Mm-hmm. He's a detective, he's a cop, kind of, he investigates things.
Right.
And so there's the Batman angle.
Right.
And I kept on thinking about, man, there's so many parts to it that I'm sure Verhoeven sort of just picked and chose what he wanted, but I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I definitely think that the movie has major comic book overtones, undertones, whatever, you know. I think it takes place completely within a comic book world.
Right.
Without ever being campy, I don't think, you know. And that's a thing that I think the sequels fall into a little bit, that they tone is such a tricky thing.
Yeah.
It's such a tricky thing, and that's one of the things that RoboCop does so well, is that it manages a really difficult tone. And the sequels sort of lapse into camp, and the first movie doesn't. And so while it's very comic booky, like you said, it's totally grounded in reality. I mean, I never really thought about him as being sort of this combination of all these different superheroes, but I think it totally applies.
I think part of the reason why it's hard to think of RoboCop as a superhero, and not that he needs to be, I don't want to draw these like inappropriate connections to comic book stuff all the time, especially because we're on sort of overload with comic book stuff. But I think it's because he is grounded in it. Like, he doesn't, believe in his own mythos. Like, mm-hmm. there's this mystical, like, crazy, like with Thor, mm-hmm. that's a hero or a protagonist who, like, believes in his own press clippings a little
bit. Sure, sure.
And RoboCop is, like, completely just not even aware that he has press clippings in the first place. Like, it's just,
right, well, that's why it's hard to label him, like, a hero, especially, I think, by the end of the movie, he has become self-aware.
Right.
He's taking action on his own in a way.
Right.
But because he's not aware of his own actions, I think for so much of the movie, it's almost hard to call him a hero. He's more of like a bullet being fired by someone else.
Right.
You know, he's just something that you point and shoot. And again, that goes back to this whole idea of satirizing the 80s action hero, that's what all these movies are, and Verhoeven's just the only one willing to come out and make that literal and say, like, right. Yeah, like, these guys are cold and machine-like, and so I'm just going to make my guy a machine.
Literally.
He's no different than Rambo.
But he won't be cold.
Yeah, right.
His name's Murphy. I think there's been some discussion about this with the Hulk character, too, that part of the reason why the Hulk worked in the Avengers mm-hmm. was that there was a... gosh, this is a fairly complicated idea. Right now, I'm really stupid. I'm not thinking very clearly. That you don't want to... Like, part of the difficulty with the Hulk is that you want the Hulk to be, like, smash things.
Right,
that's fun.
Right.
Right, but then it's sort of like this horror of, like, there's a human being trapped inside of there. Right. And I think that's what kind of makes RoboCop nice, because it's like he's not just all metal, that he's not just... It'd be a totally different movie, and I would probably watch this movie where, like, a robot goes around and shoots stuff up. It's probably called Transformers. but I think what makes RoboCop a more compelling character, mm-hmm. especially because in this movie there really isn't, like, a bad guy there's not, like, a main bad guy necessarily, mm-hmm. Is that there's that struggle of, like, I don't really want to be this thing, and mm-hmm. why am I this thing, and, like, what happened to my dead family? Oh, that's another Batman thing. like, whatever. Like, there, it's compelling because, like, it's, he, you feel bad for him.
Right.
And
right.
I don't like that.
Right. He's trapped inside this big metal suit and trying to understand his role in all of this, and again, the movie ends in a place where he has come to terms with it a little bit, where sort of where the Hulk is by the time we get to the Avengers, which mm-hmm. is like, I've made peace with this, I'm able to exist in both worlds. I'm Bruce Banner and I'm the Hulk, and that's okay. Yeah. And by the end of RoboCop, I'm RoboCop and I'm Murphy.
Yeah.
And I don't feel, again, it's been a while since I've seen the sequels, but I don't feel like they explore that much, because now you have more of a traditional hero where it's like, here's a guy who is self-aware, who's cognizant of the fact that he's this cyborg, but he's essentially a man with special powers. He has a special suit, you know, that does all this cool shit. And in the first RoboCop, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting sort of path to that point, if that makes sense. I mean, it's not an origin story necessarily, because we're so used to speaking in those terms now, because that's what all movies are. It's such a unique movie to come along when it did, because again, the 80s were not necessarily churning out a lot of really smart genre stuff. I take that back. They were. I mean, because again, at our film festival, we celebrated 1982, and you had Blade Runner and The Thing and Wrath of Khan. I mean, those are all smart movies. Even Tron, you know, which we've talked about on a past podcast. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it totally works as a movie, but it's definitely a smart movie. But by the time that sort of the action movie takes over in the 80s, the intelligence has been drained out of the genre, sort of.
Right.
And so here's RoboCop, which on the surface seems so stupid and is such a smart movie, and I think such a special movie and such a hard movie to reproduce, not for lack of trying, because again, they did two sequels, they did a TV show, they did some animated
they did a bunch of
versions,
cartoons. There's been a bunch of comic books,
and now
like
they're
three or four separate comic book things.
Right, and now they're remaking it.
I wanted to ask you about the remake.
I don't know that much about it, except that I just think it's a bad idea. I don't know why the world needs a new version of RoboCop, because I don't know what the first one doesn't do.
Because why not? Well, the right. one thing I read was that out of a Slash film was that Gary Oldman was linked playing a character that was not in the original RoboCop.
Okay.
So he's like one of the scientists apparently.
Okay.
Which so that's kind of like what's different.
Right.
You were just at right, which isn't necessary, but that's you know whatever. That's what he's bringing to it. The guy that's directing it is this Brazilian guy. I read the name; it was not familiar to me.
Yeah.
The movie that he did was it's actually on Netflix, and I forget what the name of the. Again, I've come completely unprepared. I'm sorry. but the movie's on. It's a two-part. I did two Brazilian action movies, or it's a cop story, something like that. It's a cop drama sort of deal, which now I want to go on Netflix and watch it actually to see like what this guy's about. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
But it's slated for release in 2013.
The remake is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand why we would need.
I don't think it's going to be better, but there's all these sort of names.
All, that were attached all it could to, be is different. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it like. That has worked out in the past. There have definitely been remakes that, like, I think of Dawn of the Dead all the time. Zack Snyder remade Dawn of the Dead. It has nothing to do with George Romero's original Dawn of the Dead, except that it has zombies and a shopping mall. I think both movies work in totally different ways.
Yep.
I think the first movie is this incredibly great satire. I think the remake is a really good movie where things jump out and scare you. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I understand there's room for both, but I just don't understand why they don't just write and direct a new movie.
Right. I also don't know how they're going to make that and make it not look like Terminator or make it not feel like friggin' Battleship even.
Right.
How are they going to not make it feel like Transformers?
Right.
How are you not going to make it feel like G.I. Joe?
Right.
Or may not even make it look like any of those four, which looks so similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not really sure.
Is it really just, you know, now we can do RoboCop with CGI? That is somehow better?
Yeah.
Because I would argue that no, it isn't. You know, one of the great things about RoboCop, particularly the RoboCop character, is that it's a practical suit that has so much weight as he's stomping around. Like you pointed out, like you don't get some of those jokes where he comes clomping up the stairs and pulls the guy through the wall, you know?
Right.
I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me to remake it. And by the way, let's not undersell the performance of Peter Weller.
Yeah.
Who was cast sort of late in the game, because I think originally they were looking at more traditional sort of action movie guys, like Schwarzenegger. I think some producers wanted Schwarzenegger, and somebody rightfully pointed out, no, he's too big, because once you put you take Schwarzenegger's physique, and then you put this giant metal suit on top of him,
He's gonna look fat.
He looks like the Michelin Man, I think, is what they described it. So Peter Weller was cast not only for his acting ability, but because he's kind of a slim guy.
Right.
And he's got that great jawline and that great voice. And, you know, I think it's easy to sort of write off some of his performance because he is all you really see of him for the whole movie is his chin, you know? And it's like, well, anybody could do that. Anybody could put on a suit. And to anybody who says that, I point you in the direction of RoboCop 3, where Peter Weller did not return to play the role.
Yeah.
An actor by the name of Robert John Burke played the role. And he's a fine actor. He's been in a ton of stuff, but he's no Peter Weller. Like, you really come to appreciate what a good job Peter Weller does in the first movie after seeing RoboCop 3 and seeing somebody else try to do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we take for granted, like, it's so seamless how you take for granted the physicality that he's doing, which is the... it's a thing where he's going forward, and then when he wants to turn, he turns his shoulder. He keeps his head forward, but then he turns his shoulders and his frame, and then starts moving that way, and then turns his head, which makes perfect sense. Like, he thought that through. He's like, okay, if I was a computer, how would it make sense for me to move?
It's and such a ridiculous idea. I mean, again, he moves so slowly. It's right. awkward he's the way he moves. Hell. Everything about it makes no sense. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't think he could even sit in a normal car.
Right.
Right, because shouldn't he be, like, 800 pounds?
Yes.
Like, don't they need to get him a special car? Like, how the hell does he even get in?
It's such a ridiculous idea. And the movie is so aware of that and, like, willing to run with that. Because all he can be really good for is not being killed.
Right.
And has an increased ability to kill others. You know what I mean? So again, it's this movie that's like, and Paul Verhoeven is super liberal, but he makes these movies that are all about like fascist heroes. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to me that like all they've built is a better functioning killing machine, basically, with RoboCop.
And the need for that is that society has pummeled out of, it is spun out of control.
Yeah.
Look at Detroit. It's overrun by right. whatever. Okay, you know what we'll do? We'll just build a bunch of robots like this
right.
that freaking malfunction and dream and do all this nonsense
right.
that are really slow and that weigh 800 pounds and can't probably ride in a car.
Right.
We'll just make, our idea is that we'll just make a whole bunch of those.
Right.
Everything will right. be fine, right? We'll be good. We'll just give them 3 prime directives, 4 directives, and they'll be okay.
And I love that, like, he dreams and that his humanity is a problem, that they're trying to strip that
oh, yeah,
out
yeah.
of him as
yeah.
much as possible.
Saw off his left arm. Right. He doesn't need his left arm. Right.
We were like, able to Jesus. Save one of his arms.
Jesus,
no, get rid of it. Right.
Well, he signed. Right. He signed the waiver. He doesn't need his frickin' arm. Take it off.
Do you think that the level of violence in the movie is necessary?
Oh boy. See, every time I see, when I think about the violence in the type of violence mm-hmm. in RoboCop, I always end up thinking about Total Recall because
okay.
like the same like things blowing up and
yeah,
like
yeah.
weird prosthetics and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's necessary for like I'd rather not see it just because I was like, whoa, this is really and now which is stupid because now I'm desensitized to it because I have let myself go and just see whatever I want to see. But I think at the time it was like, oh my God, why do we need to shoot that? Like we said before, why do we need
yeah.
to shoot that guy so many times?
Right.
I think you kind of need it. It serves a function of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a huge problem with it, but yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, that's gross,
right.
man. That's
right.
a little much.
Right, right, right.
But I think he's trying to say the same thing. Like why is, you know, for instance, why is RoboCop a cop or a bad guy shooting somebody else and that guy gets all bloodied up. Why is that okay?
Right.
And
right.
why are these two big swinging dicks, these like executives verbally duking it out in a bathroom? Like, why is that not the same thing?
Yeah.
I think there's sort of you kind of see that sort of juxtaposed.
Right.
So I get, you know, so I've just talked myself into thinking that the violence now is necessary, but yeah, sometimes it is like, oh, that's a little much, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is it necessary? I don't know, because you could probably make the movie without the level of violence, but it's not the same movie, you know? And Paul Verhoeven obviously, over and over again, uses crazy amounts of violence in his movies.
Right.
Maybe just because he likes it as a stylistic choice or as a tool, but I do think, like you said, in RoboCop, it kind of serves a function. Again, even if you're just going to read the movie as this crazy, heightened sort of parody of 80s action movies,
mm-hmm.
which sort of revel in violence for its own sake. It's here's a movie that then ups it 100%
yeah.
and then says, are you still okay with this? You know,
right.
is this still fun? Is this still entertaining?
Right.
But then sometimes it is entertaining. You know what I mean? Like
right.
the guy gets covered in toxic waste and it's awful.
Right. Then
he gets hit by a car.
Turns into this monster.
Right. And he gets hit by a car and you clearly see his head roll up the windshield and you're not really horrified by it. You're kind of laughing at
right.
it, you know?
Because Clarence Boddicker says, oh shit.
Right.
Like, don't you know that guy? That's
right.
the guy you know.
Right.
It's
right.
like some random dude.
So sometimes it is used almost for comedic effect. Even the guy getting shot in the boardroom at the beginning, it's one of my favorite things in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And the example that we always use is Sideshow Bob stepping on the rakes on The Simpsons, where he steps on a rake one time. Okay, funny. 2 times. Okay. 3 times. We get it. 4 times. Wait, now it's getting funny again. 8 times. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen because
right.
it just keeps doing it. So the bigger you go with something, sometimes the funnier it becomes. Yes. And so the executive being shot up in the boardroom is horrifying, but the longer it goes on and the crazier and bloodier it gets, it just becomes comedy.
Yes.
Yeah, again, I think it's all part of the movie's universe. I think it works. I understand why it would put some people off, you know. I listened to a little bit of the commentary track on the DVD, and they said that there was a shot originally in the movie after Murphy is killed, his partner, played by Nancy Allen, who's maybe the only thing about the movie that I don't think really works.
I agree.
I guess
it's unclear. Like, is it? It just seems like that's a lot of devotion for your partner.
Right. Right.
You guys just met for a day.
Right. I mean, she seems to exist to just be the person who's there to sort of try and remind him, like, no, you were a man named Murphy, come back.
But even like, why would she, I understand the need for someone like that, but why would she be that person? What's her motivation?
Right.
It's like, were you in love with them? It's so awkward.
It is very strange that they made the choice that he's sort of new and that they're brand new partners. I mean, why not have them just be old partners?
Right.
What does that change in the movie?
I don't know.
Except that it makes her storyline make sense. Like, you were my partner for 10 years.
Oh, now I remember.
Right. That's a thing, yeah. But this, whatever. So there was a scene after Murphy is killed in just this... I mean, it's so brutal what is done to him, where the camera is like all the way up at the top. It's shot down from like the ceiling of this warehouse, and you just see the scene below as she's hovering over Murphy's body. And I guess it was so bloody, it basically looked like the inside of a slaughterhouse. And they said at an early screening, they lost a lot of the audience. Like, people literally got up and walked out at that point. And so they took that shot out of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I do think, I mean, I won't say that some consideration went into how much violence is shown, but I don't think it's just to rub noses in it for the sake of showing violence.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of nose rubbing, like I said, because it's commenting on the action genre in the 1980s. So okay. I do think there's a little bit of like, hey, you like violence? Okay, here you go. Let's see if you like this much violence.
Yeah. I don't think I said. I like the movie too.
Oh, good. Okay.
It's a lot short. From what I remember, I felt like when I first saw it, it was a lot longer. But now I realize it's not that long.
No.
It's not super long.
Yeah.
But I think it works. I like that it, we've mentioned it in our conversation here, but I like that it works on like multiple levels.
Yeah.
You can watch it just as a straight up action movie. You can watch it as satire. You can watch it as like this sort of black comedy.
Right.
Kind this of thing.
Weird, incredibly violent sort of comic book. It really, like I said, I really do think it's like a special movie, and maybe that's the wrong word to use to describe RoboCop.
You're right.
But I just think it's such a unique combination of all these different things, and something that I don't think could be replicated easily, not for lack of trying.
Yeah.
I think it absolutely still holds up. I think it's really, really great.
I kind of want to get it on I read that it was on, there's a Criterion Collection version of it.
Yeah.
I want to get that.
It's out of print. It's very hard to find.
Hello, eBay.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. There's a box set, because it's been put out so many times. Back in 2004, MGM put out a box set of all three movies.
Okay.
With a ton of special features, with the unrated cut of the first movie.
Got it.
My advice is go with that one. Because even like the Blu-rays that have come out, they have no special features. It's the theatrical cut of the movie. Mm-hmm. Why it hasn't gotten better treatment on Blu-ray, I do not know. But my suggestion is to get the RoboCop trilogy, I believe it's called, on DVD.
Got it.
Great movies. Thank you very much for talking about RoboCop.
Thanks for having me again.
the movie is available on Netflix Instant if you've never seen it and you've listened to this point and you're like, I want to see it now.
Because the entire movie is spoiled.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or if us talking about it has made you want to watch it again, it is available on Netflix Instant.
Because they are talking about a remake.
Yeah, right. Might as well brush up on it. Yeah. And yeah, for sure. Next time you come on, we have to do RoboCop 2.
I'm excited.
Because it's going to be a very different conversation, I think.
You just let me know.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Stay out of trouble.